Welcome to Thursday's edition of Financial Survival, sponsored by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen, sitting in for Melody, who's busy taking care of clients today. For all your gold and silver needs, call her at toll-free at 1-800-375-4188. 800-375-4188. For the next hour, I'll be bringing you some facts, opinions, and commentary on the economic and political news of the day. For Thursday, October 20, 2022. Hey, happy National Get Smart About Credit Day, ladies and gentlemen. You know, although set up originally by the American Bankers Association to help young people learn about credit, or maybe their credit cards, the bankers' credit cards, that is, it's an appropriate day for all of us to take stock of our personal finances, especially our debt. As we mentioned on Tuesday's program, including their home mortgages, Americans have over $23.9 trillion in personal debt. Of that amount, about $1.4 trillion is for auto loans, almost $1.2 trillion in unpaid credit card balances, and now more than $1.7 trillion in student loans. And let's not get started on federal, state, and local debt, which together now approaches $35 trillion, a whopping $104,000 for each U.S. citizen. Yippee! Hooray for us, right? Let's get started with the market report. Precious metals, we'll call it a modest day. Right now in the New York spot aftermarket, we have gold down $2.70 at $16.28 an ounce. Silver actually up close to 1%, 17 cents, at $18.72. Platinum up $33. That's about 3.75% at $925. And palladium up over 3%, $60 at $2,138. Now, in the ever-changing and crazy volatile paper markets, breaching the 113 mark again today, the U.S. dollar index is actually down slightly at 112.88. And that means treasuries, maybe a little counterintuitive. 10-year yield up looks like a couple of basis points to 4.232. The 2-year yield, 4.606, still seeing that inverted yield curve signaling a coming recession. In the commodity markets, we have West Texas Intermediate domestic crude oil up about, 16 cents today, $85.71 a barrel. International Brent crude up the same at $92.57 a barrel. And in the stock markets, fairly a mundane day, as it were, just about all global markets down. Today, the Dow Jones down right now ninety points at 30,333. You got the Nasdaq down 65 points at 10,614, and the broader S&P 500 index down 29, about 0.8% at 36.65. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is today's market report brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. A lot of news again out there. today. It looks like existing homes are selling at the slowest pace since September 2012, with the exception of a brief drop at the start of the pandemic in 2020. Sales of previously owned homes fell 1.5% in September over August to a seasonally adjusted rate of 4.71 million units. That's according to the monthly survey from the National Association of Realtors. That marks the 8th straight month of sales declines in this area. Sales were lower by virtually 24% last month, year over year. Now, sharply higher mortgage rates are causing an abrupt slowdown in the housing market. The average rate in 30-year fixed home loans now just over or just under 7%, depending on your source, after starting this year just shy of 3%. And that's making an already pricey housing market even less affordable, especially for first-time buyers. Now, despite the slowdown in sales, inventory continues to drop. There were 1.25 million homes for sale at the end of September. That's down close to 1% compared with September of 2021. At the current sales pace, that represents about a 3.2-month supply. And 6 months is considered a balanced supply. Realtors chief economist Lawrence Yun said that despite weaker sales, multiple offers are still occurring, with more than a quarter of homes selling above list price due to limited inventory. The current lack of supply underscores the vast contrast with the previous major market turndown from 2008 to 10, when inventory levels were 4 times higher than they were today. Tight supply continues to put pressure on home prices. The median price of an existing home sold last month was $385,000. That's an increase of 8.5% from a year earlier. And prices climbed at all price points. That makes 127 consecutive months of annual increases. But prices are cooling. I mean, September marked the 3rd straight month-to-month price decline, which usually fall anyway this time of year. But they're falling harder this year, particularly on the lower end of the market where inventory is a lot leaner. Homes priced between $100,000 and $250,000 dropped over 28% from a year ago. Those priced between $750,000 K and a million declined just 9.5%. These higher mortgage rates aren't just spooking potential buyers. They're keeping sellers on the sidelines as well, which is adding to this inventory crunch. As the Realtors Yun observes, homeowners love their 3% mortgages and they don't want to give that up. Not sure they have any choice right now if they're going to be selling and looking to moving up. Now, boy, the number of Americans applying for unemployment benefits fell last week, and it remains historically low even as the economy slows in the midst of this decade's high inflation. Jobless claims for the week ending October 15th fell by 12,000. To 214,000. That's from 226,000 last week, according to the Labor Department, which released a weekly report this morning. Curiously, though, the four-week moving average rose by 1,250 to 212,250. Considered a proxy for layoffs, applications for jobless aid have remained historically low since the initial purge of more than 20 million jobs at the start of the pandemic in the spring of 2020. But some recent employment data suggests that the job market may be cooling slightly. But overall, it remains the healthiest part of an economy that's been shaky all year due to this high inflation and Russia's war in Ukraine. Government reported last week that inflation accelerated in September, with the cost of housing and other necessity intensifying pressure on families and businesses alike. This four-decade-high inflation has prompted the Federal Reserve to keep raising its key interest rate, which is currently in the range of 3 to 3.25%. Just a little more than 6 months ago, that rate was near zero. Sharper rate hikes have pushed mortgage rates up to 15-year highs and has made other borrowing costlier as well, car loans, personal loans, what have you. The Fed hopes that higher interest rates will slow borrowing and spending and push inflation closer to its traditional 2% target. Good luck with that. Fed officials have warned that the unemployment rate will likely have to rise as part of their fight against rising prices. And the most recent government jobs report likely snuffed out any hope that the Fed would pause its rate increases when it meets in early November, in fact, November 1 and 2. American employers showed their hiring in September, slowed, but still added 263,000 jobs. And the Gov's U6 unemployment rate, which includes discouraged job hunters and those working part-time who want full-time work, dropped from 7% to 6.7%. Fed's hoping that a slower pace of hiring would eventually mean less pressure on employers to raise pay and to pass those costs on to their customers through price increases, a traditional recipe for rising inflation. But September's job growth was likely too solid to sway the Fed's inflation watchdog. We will talk a little bit more about one of them later in the program. Now, the Fed released its monthly report today showing continued contraction in regional manufacturing activity in the month of October. The Philly Fed said its diffusion index for current activity inched up to a negative 8.7 in October from a negative 9.9 in September. Now, I guess that's slightly better reading, but the negative reading still indicates contraction. I guess it just means it's contracting a little less than before. The uptick by the headline index partly reflects a slightly slower pace of contraction in new orders, which isn't good, and the new orders crept up to a negative 15.9 from 17.6 in September. So I would say that it actually crept down a tad. Number of employees also jumped 28.5 from 12, indicating a notably faster rate of job growth, exactly what the Fed does not want to see. Although, you know, if it's happening in manufacturing, that means some jobs may be returning here to the States from abroad. Meanwhile, the shipment index edged down to 8.6 from 8.8. And the prices paid index notably rose to 36.3 from 29.8. Now, looking ahead, the Philly Fed said the survey's future general activity indexes suggest that the surveyed firms expect declines over the next 6 months. By the New York Fed on Monday showed regional manufacturing activity in that region contracting more than expected in October as well. In fact, the New York Fed said its general business conditions index slid to a negative 9.1 from negative 1.5 in September. That's a pretty significant contraction. Looking ahead, the New York Fed said firms don't expect business conditions to improve over the next 6 months. I guess the more important question is, how big will they get worse? So, across the country, families are looking to the coming winter with dread as energy costs soar and fuel supplies tighten. Department of Energy is projecting steep price increases for home heating compared with last winter, and some worry whether heating assistance programs will actually be able to make up the difference for families that are struggling. The situation is even bleaker in Europe, with Russia's continued shutoff of natural gas continuing to push prices up there and causing painful shortages. Natural gas prices here today, actually, I think we're down to under $6. In Maine, gentleman Aaron Ramo saw the writing on the wall and began stocking up on heating oil in 5-gallon increments over the summer as the costs were creeping upward. He filled a container with heating oil as he could afford it, usually on paydays, and used the heating assistance program to top off his 275-gallon oil tank with the arrival of colder weather last month. His family is trying to avoid being forced into a difficult decision, one that many families in some parts of the country will be facing, choosing between food or heating their home. Ramo said it's a hard one. What are you going to choose for food, or what amount of fuel oil are you going to choose to stay warm? The National Energy Assistance Directors Association says energy costs will be the highest in more than a decade this winter. Talked about the Energy Department projecting heating bills will jump 28% for those who rely on natural gas. And that's used by about half of U.S. households. Heating oil projected to be 27% higher. Electricity just 10%. Or got her taste of that yesterday when she called her heating oil provider to fill her family's tank for the winter. The cost, $5.79 a gallon. Slightly less than $4 a gallon last year at this time. Ouch. It'll be more intense farther north you go. New England's heavily reliant on heating oil to keep homes warm. It's projected to cost more than $2,300 to heat a home there with heating oil this winter. Across the country, some are beginning to urge utilities to implement a moratorium on winter shutoffs, and members of Congress have already added $1 billion in heating aid. There will be fewer federal dollars than last year when pandemic aid was still flowing. So that total will be about $4.8 billion. It's the third hottest summer on record this past year, already strained the so-called LIHEAP funding. But the funding level represents an overall reduction, actually, from last year when pandemic relief pushed total energy assistance past $8 billion. In Maine, people are scared, they're worried, they're frustrated, according to Lisa McGee, who coordinates the heating aid program for Community Concepts in Lewiston. And she says there's more anxiety this year. Now, going to be having a break here any second, I do believe. So we're going to save this story about the Philly Fed's Patrick Harker for the second segment. Please stay tuned. Stick around. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm taking what they're giving because I'm working for a living.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. TruthAndEducationRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Oh, oh, mercy, mercy, mercy. All things and what they used to
be. Mercy, mercy me. Welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen, sitting in for Melody today. More news out of the Philly Fed, where its president, Patrick Harker, this afternoon said higher interest rates have done little to keep inflation in check so far, so more increases will be needed. Now, Harker, who I believe this year is a non-voting member of the policymaking FOMC, said, "We're going to keep raising rates for a while, given our frankly disappointing lack of progress on curtailing inflation. I expect we'll be well above 4% by the end of the year." Markets widely expect the Fed to approve a fourth consecutive 75 basis point interest rate hike November 2nd, followed by another of the same, possibly 50 basis points in December. The expectation is that the FOMC will then take rates a tad higher next year, early in the year, before settling in the range of around 4.5% to 4.75%. Harker did indicate that those higher rates are likely to stay in place for an extended period. We shall see. Now, it didn't take long. UK Prime Minister Liz Truss resigned today following her failed tax-cutting budget that rocked London financial markets and led to a revolt within our own Conservative Party. Truss was in office for a measly 44 days, making her the shortest-serving PM in British history. 10 days of that, government business was paused after the death of Queen Elizabeth II. Now, in a statement outside of 10 Downing Street, Truss said, "We set out a vision for a low-tax, high-growth economy that would take advantage of the freedoms of Brexit. I recognize, though, given the situation, I cannot deliver the mandate on which I was elected by the Conservative Party. I have therefore spoken to His Majesty the King to announce that I am resigning as leader of the Conservative Party." He did say she'd stay on until a successor is chosen. The party is now due to complete a leadership election within the next week, much faster than this summer's two-month period. Whether that is going to include just Conservative members of Parliament or other party members, like with Truss, we will see. Some in the other parties are calling for a national election. I'm not sure there'll be enough of support for that, but again, time will tell. Labor leader Keir Starmer said the Conservative Party has shown it no longer has a mandate to govern. Now, one of the successors who's being suggested or bandied about includes former PM who resigned, opening the way for Truss to ascend, the Boris Johnson. That would be interesting and certainly ironic. There are other possible replacements, along with Jeremy Hunt, Penny Mordaunt, Defense Minister Ben Wallace. Crazy stuff. So, sending mail is going to cost more soon as the Postal Service plans yet another round of price hikes on postage. Cost of new forever stamps and other postage is set to increase on January 22nd. Back to postage, we'll see about a 4.2% jump in price. To move, officials say, is necessary to keep up with, yes, inflation. For instance, the price of a first-class mail forever stamp will increase by 3 cents to 63 cents by early next year. Consumers can also expect to pay 60 cents for 1-ounce metered mail and 48 cents to send a domestic postcard. The news comes after the USPS hiked the price of stamps this past July, from 58 to 60 cents. Now, the USPS announcement also noted that the Postal Service is also seeking price adjustments for special service products like certified mail, the box rental fees, money order fees, cost to purchase insurance when mailing an item, although it didn't say what those costs would be. Now, changes aren't expected on the single piece letter and flat additional ounce price, which is 24 cents. Shouldn't be a surprise. Earlier this year, Postmaster General Louis DeJoy warned that Americans would see, quote, uncomfortable increases in postage rates as the Postal Service works toward becoming self-sustaining. A lot of patience for that, too. That'll take a long time. Board of Governors has okayed the last price increases and the Postal Regulatory Commission, I believe includes members of Congress, is set to review these proposed. Still, these increases still sounds like a pretty good deal to me, especially when compared to, you know, UPS, FedEx, and some of the other mail services. Here's some disturbing news. It's the story that just isn't going away. The major freight railroads appear unwilling to give their maintenance workers much more than they received in the initial contract they offered last week. And that's increasing the chances of a nationwide strike. Railroads took the unusual step of issuing a statement late yesterday, rejecting the Brotherhood of Maintenance of Way Employees Division Union's latest request to add paid sick time on top of the 24% raises and $5,000 in bonuses they received in the first five-year deal. Union Pacific CEO Lance Fritz said that he thinks the main reason the BMWED union rejected its initial contract last week was that the details of improved expense reimbursement in the deal were still being negotiated at UP, Union Pacific, while workers were voting. So it wasn't exactly clear what those workers would receive for their travel expenses when they go on the road to repair tracks. Now, six of the 12 railroad unions that represent 115,000 workers nationwide have approved their tentative agreements so far, but all of them have to ratify their contracts to avoid a strike. Unions have agreed to put a strike on hold until at least mid-November, while the BMWED negotiates a new deal and the rest of the unions vote on their proposed deals. So there's no immediate threat that the trains most businesses rely on to deliver raw materials and finished products are going to stop moving. But let's face it, a railroad strike could literally devastate an already struggling economy. Fritz told investors after his railroad released its third quarter earnings report, ultimately, I remain confident that we're going to get our temporary agreements ratified and be able to avoid a strike. A group that negotiates on behalf of the major railroads like UP, BNSF, Norfolk Southern, CSX and Kansas City Southern said the new contract should closely follow the recommendations of the Special Board of Arbitrators that President Biden appointed this past summer. Railroads, which said that the board rejected union demands for paid sick time other beyond what it already has, warned that now is not the time to introduce new demands that rekindle the prospect of a railroad strike. again, concerns about quality of life and the ability for workers, particularly engineers and conductors who drive trains, to take time off without being penalized have weighed heavily on the negotiations. But the railroads say that workers already have significant short-term disability benefits that kick in after 4 or 7 days and last up to 52 weeks that the unions have already negotiated over the years. Bottom line, if both sides can't agree on the contract or contracts, Congress could step in to block a strike and impose terms on the workers. But that, I suspect, would be a time-consuming task. Politics aside, with no guaranteed income whatsoever, no guaranteed outcome, Freudian slip whatsoever. Hey, we already know that the pandemic catalyzed a major shift in the way Americans live and work. And a new report from the New York Fed, didn't know if you saw this, shows that workers are taking advantage of the shift toward remote work to spend more time sleeping in, and engaging in leisure activities. I wish Melody were here for this one. David Dam, a former New York Fed research assistant, said, quote, one of the most enduring shifts resulting from the pandemic has occurred in the workplace, with millions making the switch to work from home. No surprise there. He continues, even as the pandemic has waned, more than 15% of full-time employees remain fully remote, and an additional 30% working in hybrid arrangements, meaning both home and at their offices. And these changes have substantially reduced time spent commuting to work. In the aggregate, Dam says, Americans now spend 60 million fewer hours traveling to work every day. Dam and his colleagues drew on the American Time Use Survey to better understand how remote workers are using the time saved on commutes. They found a substantial fall in time spent working. The decrease in hours worked away from home only partially offset by an increase in working at home. Changes in behavior differ among age group, with younger Americans using the saved commuting time to engage in leisure activities like eating out, going to the gym, or attending social events. Americans over 30 spent more time on childcare, home maintenance and repair projects, and meal preparation. Now, Dam himself believes the flexibility of remote working arrangements and the apparent fact that remote workers are able to spend less time overall working will likely mean that workers will bargain hard to maintain that ability. Findings lend credence to the various reports on employees' preferences for flexible work arrangements, given that cutting the commute enables people to spend their time on other activities. We'll see what happens. Hey, grocery and energy prices spiking, we know that. Credit card interest rates are climbing, know that too. But rejoice, shoppers can expect some relief as they start holiday shopping, we're seeing, or hearing. I don't know if hearing is believing. Time will tell on that. But apparently retailers desperate to coax fatigued consumers to spend. Inflation fatigue, to be sure, are expected to beef up their promotions as they struggle to get rid of already marked down excess inventory. Marshall Cohen, who chief industry advisor for the market research firm NPD, says, this will be the year of the perpetual deal for Christmas. In some gift categories, merchandise could be marked down by more than 20% on the retailer websites. That's according to Adobe Analytics. If our engineer can hear me, I'm hearing some background noise. It sounds from other broadcasts. So, Todd, I don't know if you're hearing the same thing. In any event, computers, electronics, toys, all expected to hit the deepest discounting levels since Adobe started tracking these figures in 2017. Now, this abundance of deals is a sharp departure from a year ago. Last holiday season, shoppers started buying gifts early to avoid out-of-stocks and shipping delays. Concerns about not getting hot items meant consumers were willing to pay up. This year, a different story. Retailers have an abundance of merchandise right now. Shoppers are reluctant to spend, particularly if they're paying a lot more for food, housing, healthcare, gas, other items. People are also spending more on travel and other leisure experiences after 2+ years of pandemic restrictions. Even with the bigger discounts, industry watchers expect a quiet holiday season because of household stretched budgets. Consulting firm Bain & Company forecast growth as much as 7.5% from last year. But when adjusted for inflation, just 1-3%. Consulting firm Alex Partners projects a 4-7% increase. But that's actually a decline when factoring in a Numerator market researcher Leo Feeler, chief economist there, says it's food, it's medical care, it's housing, it's shelter, it's essential services such as veterinary care. All of these things come first before consumers buy holiday gifts. Well, let's try and fit this in before the break. Ronald Reagan would be proud of this one. In a vintage, well, there you go again moment, Turkey's central bank today slashed its key interest rate 150 basis points, percentage and a half, for the third straight months of cuts from 12% to 10.5%, despite inflation there running at over 83%. Market analysts expected a 100% point cut, basis point cut, so the move still managed to take many by surprise, despite the increasing regularity of these interest rate reductions. New 24-year high, 83.45% in September. Many people in Turkey say prices there for basic goods have, in some cases, more than tripled in the past year. Erdogan, their president, Turkey's president, vocally espouses the unorthodox belief that raising interest rates increases inflation rather than the other way around, and is called hiking rates the mother of all evils. The lira, as we've reported, has lost about 28% of its value against the dollar this year. I think I hear some music. That can only mean one thing. We're headed for another break. We'll be back in a few. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cedarstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cedarstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. TheTruthAboutRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Okay, I promise I won't bring you down one more time today. Welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. Dave Allen here. For all your precious metal needs, call us at 1-800-375-4188. Call this the last segment, the windy one. Two long-winded stories to talk about. But interesting, compelling, nevertheless, I hope. The first one today, Pam and Russ Martins of Wall Street on Parade report that they will be asking the Senate Banking Committee and its chair, Sherrod Brown of Ohio, to call an emergency hearing and subpoena the testimony of two researchers from the Office of Financial Research, Andrew Elaw and Dasol Kim. The Martins say that Elaw and Kim have essentially blown the whistle on how too-big-to-fail banks have once again endangered the stability of the U.S. financial system through their use of over-the-counter derivatives. Unfortunately, they write, because of the legions of lobbyists employed by Wall Street, these two men are prevented from revealing the names of the most dangerous banks and their most dangerous counterparties, because that information is considered restricted information obtained through supervisory inspections. Boo hiss. The Martins say that the secrets they are being forced to keep present a clear and present danger to the financial stability of the U.S., unquote. They point out that Andrew Elaw is professor of finance at Indiana University, the PhD from the London School of Economics and Political Science. Kim joined the Office of Financial Research in 2016. He holds a doctorate in financial economics from the Yale School of Management. Rejects there. Now, Elaw and Kim first sounded the alarm in a report that was published by the Office of Financial Research last July. The OFR, as you may know, is a federal agency created under the Dodd-Frank legislation in 2010 to closely monitor financial threats and analyze data that too-big-to-fail banks could never again crash the U.S. financial system as they did in 2008. Martins write that, among other things, Elaw and Kim found, quote, moral hazard behavior in counterparty choices, showing these exposures are strongly linked, to systemic risk. Now, the term OTC derivative markets refers to the obscure over-the-counter derivative contracts entered into between two supposedly disinterested parties. As explained by the Martins, a too-big-to-fail bank is typically on one side of that trade. That $700 trillion in face amount OTC derivatives exist today. That's 14 times more than one estimate of global GDP. That, I would say, is a lot of risk. And federal regulators are doing virtually nothing to rein them in. As the Martins point out, quote, losses on uncleared derivatives are fully borne by the bank, unquote. Despite the promise of Congress to reduce the threat of derivatives through Dodd-Frank, more than half of derivatives at U.S. global banks remain non-centrally cleared today. That is just outrageous in and of itself. Further research by Elaw and Kim revealed that banks are also more likely to connect with riskier counterparties for their most material exposures. and that, quote, overall, the results provide evidence of risk propagation in bank networks through non-bank linkages in opaque markets. I want to say the research duo explained in an updated report that global banks are piling on to the same risky non-bank counterparties for their over-the-counter derivative trades. Make matters worse, they're not hedging their risks, this risk effectively, because at least some of these risky counterparties aren't even big enough to have single-name credit default swaps available to hedge with. Plus, more of these counterparties aren't other banks that federal regulators generally look out for. Instead, they're other corporations. Martins report that according to the researchers, there are both, quote, non-bank financial counterparties, which could be insurance companies, remember AIG, brokerage firms, do I hear Lehman Brothers, asset managers or hedge funds, hi Billy Wang, and of course non-financial corporate counterparties, which they point out could be just about any domestic or foreign corporation. In other words, Martins observe, most Americans, quote, have no idea if they hold a large investment position in a publicly traded company that could blow up any day from reckless dealings in derivatives with global banks, unquote. Wall Street, we know, has a history of blowing up its depositors and shareholders with derivative products. Remember that Merrill Lynch devastated Orange County, California, with derivatives. And some of the largest Wall Street trading houses blew up insurer AIG, forcing a $185 billion bailout for that alone. J.P. Morgan Chase screwed its own depositors out of $6.2 billion in the London whale derivative scandal of 2012 and 13. Derivatives in general played a major role in the spread of financial crisis in 2008, and they continue to sound the warning bells 14 years later. The Martins say that given this lurid history, it would be a dereliction of duty for the Senate Banking Committee to fail to call an emergency hearing on this vital matter. I couldn't agree more. Thank you, Pam and Russ Martins. And last today, country's largest online source of JFK assassination records has sued President Biden and the National Archives to force the federal government to release all remaining documents related to the most mysterious murder of a U.S. president 60 years ago. The Mary Farrell Foundation filed the federal lawsuit 1 year after Biden issued a memo postponing the release of 16,000 records assembled under the JFK Assassination Records Collection Act of 1992. Congress passed that act without any opposition 30 years ago. JFK Records Act, signed by President Bill Clinton, required that the documents be made public by October 26, 2017. Well, hey, as of next Wednesday, that was 5 years ago. President Donald Trump delayed the release and kicked the can to Biden, who critics say continue the policy of federal obfuscation that's existed since Kennedy was assassinated on that fateful day, November 22nd, 1963. It's high time that the government got its act together and obeyed the spirit and letter of the law. That is the vice president of the Mary Farrell Foundation, Jeff Morley. An expert on the assassination and the CIA. He says, this is about our history and our right to know it. Hear, hear. Morley's sentiment is shared by fellow historians, open government advocates, and even some members of the Kennedy family, who rarely have commented on the assassination. RFK Jr., JFK's nephew, said, quote, it was a momentous crime, a crime against American democracy, and the American people have the right to know. The law requires the records be released. It's bizarre. It's been almost 60 years since my uncle's death. What are they hiding? Unquote. Well, most experts believe that the unreleased or heavily redacted records almost certainly don't include irrefutable proof that others were complicit in the murder of Kennedy, along with Lee Harvey Oswald. What the records would shed more light on, they say, is a period in American history linked to JFK's presidency and his assassination, like Cold War operations by U.S. intelligence agents, U.S.-Cuba relations, and the plot to kill Fidel Castro. So the war on the mafia waged by then Attorney General RFK, who of course was assassinated 5 years after his brother. The hidden documents, however, could also show something potentially more sinister, they say. CIA contracts with Oswald while Kennedy was still alive, which CIA has repeatedly covered up, by the way, according to experts like Rolf Mowat-Larsen. He's a former CIA agent who's been critical of the agency and has lectured about JFK's assassination. He said, "What I think happened in a nutshell is that Oswald was recruited into a rogue CIA plot. This group of 3, 4, or 5 rogues decided their motive was to get rid of Kennedy after the Bay of Pigs and the Cuban Missile Crisis because they thought it was their patriotic duty, given the threat the country was under at the time." In a statement, the CIA says it is adhering to the JFK Records Act and Biden's memo, which called for the release of the documents by December 15th. The National Archives and Records Administration, that's the agency in charge of the JFK documents, also said it's complying with the law and procedures Biden outlined in his previous memo. But the lawsuit argues that the federal agencies haven't followed the law and that both Biden's executive order and Trump's previous delay violated the 1992 statute. The suit asked the judge to declare Biden's memo void and disclose the records as Congress intended 30 years ago. Biden's memo blamed the pandemic for slowing the disclosure process. That's an argument rejected by the foundation's attorney, Bill Simpich, who says, "It's a dog ate my homework argument. This case is all about delay. The agencies always have new and better excuses." Foundation fears that agencies haven't made enough progress in the year since the memo was issued in meeting the basic rules of disclosure under the JFK Act, necessitating the lawsuit. The 16,000 documents are among the most sensitive records concerning JFK's assassination. They say about 70% of them are controlled by the CIA, followed by the FBI, about 23%. According to Morley, the suit alleges that the federal government unlawfully redacted 11 specific records, including a 1961 memo to reorganize the CIA after the failed Bay of Pigs invasion, personnel files of 3 CIA officers tied to Oswald, a 1962 Defense Department false flag operation to stage a violent incident in the U.S. that would be blamed on Cuba. Also, records relating to the Castro assassination plot and a JFK document removed from Watergate burglar E. Howard Hunt's security file. I've always thought myself or wondered myself if he was on the grassy knoll that day. The foundation's also asking the court to order the National Archives to find records that are, quote, known to exist, but that are not part of the JFK collection. One of those records, according to the lawsuit, concerns one George Joannides, who was the chief of covert action at the CIA's Miami station and served as case officer for a New Orleans-based CIA-funded exile group that had a series of encounters with Oswald in 63. The lawsuit accuses the CIA of wrongly withholding files related to Joannides from the National Archives. In another instance, the lawsuit asked the court to compel the public release of tape recordings of a man named Carlos Marcello, who allegedly told a cellmate that he was involved in JFK's assassination. Transcripts of that recording exist, but the foundation wants to hear the recordings to fully evaluate the veracity and significance of those conversations because, well, Marcello died in 1993. Number of people say the agency's stonewalling and the old Warren Commission's disputed conclusion in 64 that Oswald was a lone wolf has only led people around the world to mistrust their governments. Conspiracy theory expert Joe Usinski, a University of Miami political scientist, says his polling and research have shown that a majority of Americans don't believe that Oswald acted alone. It makes it the most important, I guess not important, the most popular conspiracy theory in the country, possibly ever. Well, maybe with the possible exception of Mary Magdalene having been Jesus' birth mother. Usinski said he's hesitant to draw a direct line between lack of trust in the government and the refusal to release the JFK records, but he argues the feds essentially have themselves to blame. The whole argument, he says, about documents is stupid. The CIA is wrong. All of this should have been released a long time ago, and it's shameful. The government has yet to do so. Usinski added, at the same time, there's not a document sitting in a government vault somewhere that says, we did it. I don't know about you, but I believe that every baby boomer who was alive on that fateful day in 63 has an opinion about who did it. I also believe that we'll probably never know what really happened. Paraphrase a popular saying, in this case, truth is in the eye of the beholder. That's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back next Tuesday. Melody back tomorrow with Reverend Butch. Also be on the lookout for our weekly What a Rush of Gold and Silver blog in your email inboxes in the morning. Thanks as always to our engineer Todd and to you, loyal listener, for tuning into Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. Bye-bye.